From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 15th day of March 2017. It's the last day to sign up for USDA's crop insurance program. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Fake. She's from Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. The cold has been actually good for the winter wheat crop, not so great for the fruit crop. He'll tell us all about that. And along the way, we'll discuss what's been happening in the world of agricultural news and revisit something Gary Schnittke told us yesterday on the show, right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this 15th day of March. It's a Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Jackie Vank. She's at Stuart Peterson. Good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, so I want to start with the Federal Reserve because in the last hour and a half or so, the Board of Governors got together and they told us that they're going to raise rates. What do we know?
Well, you know, they raised the rates by 0.25%. And basically what I took away from it is, you know, that they are they're being conservative. They still see the potential for three more raises in 2017. And so that would say pretty much every single time they meet from now on, it'll probably be a rate raise. But the good news was that core inflation still stayed below 2%. That's really good news for us. And after the report, we actually saw the NASDAQ hit a new all-time high. So the Dow, of course, itself is trading higher. It's above the 10-day moving average. I think there was a lot of angst about this, exactly what was going to happen. And when I look at the dollar diving the way it is, you saw a lot of people who were buying the dollar, I think, with the idea that they didn't think that they were going to raise the rates. But, you know, even though things look good in the economy, I think you probably said it best when we had talked earlier, and that's, you know, Janet Yellen more or less said, we're not going to do anything based on what we think might happen in the future. We have to wait and see. So it was all in all, I guess, a pretty much an expected report.
In fact, I did record some of the press conference with Janet Yellen, and I'll run that actuality or that little bit from her where she talks about the Trump administration, relatively speaking, and the fact that the 0.25% rate today and everything they've talked about so far was really only a reaction to what's happening in the current economy.
So we have not discussed in detail potential policy changes that could be put into place, and we have not tried to map out what our response would be to particular policy measures. We recognize that there is great about the timing, the size, the character of policy changes that may be put in place, and don't think that that's a decision or a set of that we need to make until we know more about what policy changes will go into effect. So I do want to emphasize that while some participants have penciled in some fiscal policy changes into their projections, that the basis for today's decision is simply our assessment of the progress of the economy against our long-established goals of maximum employment and price stability. There's nothing that we've done or anticipate that is a speculation. I think it's fair to say there's nothing that's a speculation about preemptive responses to future policy moves. We have plenty of time to see what happens.
That, of course, is Janet Yellen. She is the chair of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, and they have raised the rate in the last hour and a half, and just had a press conference about that rate raise and what their expectations are for the coming year. Talking now, of course, with Jackie Vake. She told us that the Federal Reserve does plan to make at least three more rate raises, and I suspect probably they'll do 0.25 at a time, I suppose. But we'll see what happens, Jackie, with that. Can we move on to some other issues, I think, that we probably ought to take up? USDA numbers last week, I'd kind of like your assessment of those.
Well, you know, when I looked at the general numbers between the U.S. and the world, you know, they were a little higher than estimates, but they were not. There was nothing that was a huge surprise. I think the biggest surprise probably were the Brazilian numbers. You know, we don't usually see the USDA being very aggressive, but they raised the bean number by 146 million bushels to 3.96 billion for the crop for this year, and corn they were even more aggressive. They raised it by 196 million. To 3.6 billion when you compare it to February. So, you know, those are really big, big numbers. In fact, they were actually bigger than what CONAB, which is a reporting group down in Brazil, did. Brazil just keeps on proving that they're not like us. Okay, I did a presentation a number of years ago, and I titled it "They're Not Like Us." You know, tongue in cheek, U.S. But they aren't. If you look at CONAB's Brazilian numbers, they came in at 3.95 billion. That crop is 444 million bigger than last year. And they planted 83.4 million acres, which is up 1.5 million acres from last year. Now, here in the U.S., you know, if we're going to go up 1.5 million acres, we're going to steal it from some other crops. That's the difference in Brazil. They don't have to do that. And the projected yields right now are at 46 bushels to the acre. That's 10.7% higher than last year. So they are, you know, they've had very good weather. So far, they've harvested about 56% of their crop, and that's ahead of last year and ahead of what their average is, you know. So it's pretty amazing. Export-wise there, too, the USDA was more aggressive. They came in at $2.2 billion. CONAB came in at $2.1 billion. And so I think that we just have to keep remembering that they have a lot of land in the Cerrado that they can continue to expand out into and just keep on adding more acres if they want. Now, when CONAB did the Brazilian corn crop, they came in at $3.5 billion, which is a tenth of a billion below where the USDA came in. But that's 880 million bushels more than last year, 33.7% higher. I mean, that just blows me away when I think about that. And one-third of their crop is full season, and two-thirds of their crop is safrina. So when you look at the safrina acres, they're up by about 6.8% this year, and they're looking at a huge yield of 58.5. But the reality is, you know, that's not in the bin yet, because those safrina acres have a long ways to go. They've probably got another 3 to 4 months yet before we really can say that we've got that crop down there. It's just another thing that proves to us or shows us what it's like down there. And they are up against some Brazilian soybean rust. I was reading, I thought it was very interesting. The agents or the fungicides that are being used for rust are quickly the rust is becoming resistant to the fungicides. And they say it's because they're using too many chemicals with the same mode of action. And unfortunately, it's happening in Paraná, which is one of their big production states, and Mato Grosso do Sul. It's not in Mato Grosso itself yet, but they think it's going to take 5 or 6 years just to develop new fungicides. Now, for all our guys that are listening, don't go jumping up and down and thinking that this is going to dramatically reduce their crop, because I wouldn't say that that's necessarily going to be the case, because they still are at a very low level of cases being reported. But they're doing a lot of things. The soy-free period right now in Paraná still remains June to September, where Mato Grosso went April to September, and now Paraná is talking about doing the same thing. You know, you talk about shooting yourself in the foot. When bean prices were high, guys got greedy and they double-cropped beans. And you know, that is an absolute no-no down there, because of the fact that soy rust just thrives off that double crop situation. And so that's something that they banned at this point in time, too.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us. And we'll talk with you again next week, Jackie.
Yep. Thanks, Todd. See ya.
That's Jackie Vikes with Stuart Peterson. She joins us on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with budget cuts. The Environmental Protection Agency could be in for an even bigger budget whacking than previously expected. A senior administration official confirms it is looking at deep cuts, maybe a bit north of 25%. The Trump administration has already proposed cutting EPA's budget by nearly that much, from its current level of $8.1 billion to $6.1 billion, and shrinking the agency's workforce by 3,000 people. EPA's climate change work would likely take a big hit under such reductions. But what about the USDA? Well, we still don't have any word that sheds light on how the White House budget outline, which is expected tomorrow, will treat the Department of Agriculture. But based on reports from other agencies and the administration's desire for reductions in non-defense spending, it's probably safe to assume that sizable cuts are being cooked up there as well. Areas to watch closely include the Extension Service, rural development, agricultural research, and anything related to foreign aid or foreign ag. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C. Yesterday, veteran trade attorney Robert Lighthizer's confirmation hearing went quite well before the Senate Finance Committee. In terms of substance, over 2.5 hours, the nominee for U.S. Trade Representative promised strong enforcement of existing trade agreements, straddled the line between respecting current U.S. trade policy and recognizing the need for some changes, and pledged to prioritize a range of issues, including improving market access for agricultural products. The hang-up remains Democrats' insistence that he must receive a waiver because of his past work representing foreign governments. Here's one ag highlight. In response to Senator John Thune, he's a Republican from South Dakota, on the EU's push for protections for geographically related food names, Lighthizer said, "We have to take it head on. We want to discourage other countries from agreeing to these geographic indicators and resist them in the United States," said Lighthizer. Well, since we've mentioned the EU, let's go from D.C. to the European Union, to Helsinki, in fact, where an EU chemical agency says the weed killer glyphosate is not carcinogenic. Glyphosate, the key ingredient in Monsanto Company's Roundup herbicide, should not be classified as a substance causing cancer. This according to the European Chemical Agency. It made its conclusion yesterday, and that possibly paves the way for its license renewal in the EU. The European Commission said it expects to restart talks with member states on reapproving the use of glyphosate and herbicides after receiving the formal opinion from the ECHA, which is expected by August. Now back to D.C. we go. A coalition of 60 agricultural lending, insurance, and conservation groups wants the Trump administration and Congress to protect the federal crop insurance program, arguing that it's in the interest of U.S. taxpayers. In letters to Agriculture Secretary nominee Sonny Perdue, Office of Management and Budget Director Mick Mulvaney, and House and Senate Budget and Appropriation leaders, the coalition said the crop insurance has replaced the constant demand for expensive ad hoc disaster-related financial assistance. Instead, farmers spend $3.5 billion to $4 billion a year on insurance premiums, which the government has spent an average of $6.8 billion a year subsidizing since 2011, and typically incur losses of about 30% before their policy pays an indemnity. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Look us up online at willag.org. There you can find our broadcast schedule for the whole of the day. You can also listen to most of our programming not long after it airs on our radio stations in Commodity Week, before it ever airs on any of our radio stations, all online at willag.org. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You know, farmers across the United States aren't very happy with the price of corn in Chicago. However, a University of Illinois study shows they might reconsider what that price really means, given the very good yields most harvested last fall. A price times yield equals income. It's a pretty simple calculation, but one that's pretty easy to dismiss when the price is really low. Gary Schnutke wondered a bit about that as it relates to the nation's corn and soybean farmers. So the University of Illinois agricultural economist took some time to figure out just how close to the countywide trend line yield every corn and soybean growing county in the nation came last fall. Most, he says, especially for soybeans, were above trend.
Yeah, so we used data from 1972 up to the present to fit our linear trends. There are areas of the world that have below trend yields. Most notably close to us is Ohio and Indiana. Ohio particularly had below trend yields on corn. The whole counties right along the Mississippi River, starting in southern Indiana, Illinois, and going all the way down through Arkansas, Boot Hill, Missouri, Mississippi, Louisiana had below trend yields. New York and Pennsylvania had below trend yields. So pretty much, you know, counties, a lot of the counties were in the eastern part of the United States that had below trend yields on corn. Soybeans, on the other hand, most everybody had above trend yields. We had an exceptionally good yielding year on soybeans. The areas where we'd had below trend yields, or a lot of counties had below trend yields, again, were New York and Pennsylvania.
Here's an example of what all that means. Schnutke uses Sangamon County, Illinois, where the trend line yield for 2016 was 194 bushels to the acre for corn, and the actual countywide yield was 222.
That has a sizable impact on revenue, right? So we took that that above trend, multiplied it by 340 price, which is what WASDE is projecting right now, and found that that just above trend added $95 compared to normal yield for Sangamon County. And that's a significant amount, obviously. So in those areas of the world where we had above trend yields, we have higher incomes.
You may check out Gary Schnitke's county by county trendline yield maps and yield differentiations for corn and soybeans on the FarmDoc Daily website. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this 15th day of March. It's Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is with us today. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us. Let's start with the hard red winter wheat growing regions of the United States, North America. How are we faring?
Well, at the moment, it's status quo. We've been blessed. I guess they've been blessed. Somebody's been blessed by the persistence of frequent nighttime freezes out there. That's really helped to protect the crop and the moisture situation. It's dry. Absolutely, it's dry. The crop could be seriously stressed if it got into a persistent warm weather mode. But we have been bouncing around a lot, where the temperatures would heat up into the 70s and 80s and turn right around and drop to the teens and 20s. Now, that's not a really good environment for the crop to be in. It causes heaving and could break some root systems and cause a few other problems. But it's not as bad as just going into hot weather and staying there for weeks on end. And they don't have the moisture to do that with. So the bottom line is that this is okay. It's keeping the crop development in check at the moment. But this cold air mass is in the east half of the country is leaving the plains now, and it will be much warmer for the rest of this week, the weekend, and next week. Temperatures frequently in the 70s and 80s. Freezes at night will kind of disappear. And so the stress will be on, the pressure will be on this crop. And next week, starting around Wednesday and Thursday, there's a good chance for a storm system to come across the region. It still is ill-defined. It may be a near miss for some locations. Other areas might get a halfway decent amount of rain. Right now, I think the High Plains region may not get more than about a quarter of an inch, and that is the driest area. Just to the east of that, maybe a quarter of an inch to an inch of rain, and a couple of spots in Oklahoma, maybe 1 to 2 inches. So it's going to be a little bit of a teasing storm. But the best news is that there is a follow-up system that comes in the second weekend of the two-week outlook. And if that one occurs and brings some moisture with it as well, I think we will see a short-term bout of improvement for much of this region. But follow-up rain is going to still be very, very important in April.
You mentioned that the cold in those regions was important to make sure that that crop stayed protected. However, we are going to drop colder temperatures as well into the southeastern United States. Do we have any concerns?
Absolutely, we do. We have a lot of fruit trees that were flowering earlier this month and in late February because of the unusually warm weather we had previously. And most of those crops are going to be hurt by the freezes coming up. We already had some damage occur in a few spots last night. But tonight, we'll likely see the freezes all the way down into northern Florida. This will impact fruits and vegetables of all kinds, so not only fruit trees, but blueberries and raspberries. Some of those crops are all in the beginning of their development cycle, and getting temperatures down below freezing will not do them any good. Fortunately, we're not going to get the freezes into citrus country, but it will be cold enough for a little bit of frost down there. And we are worried about some of the minor wheat that is produced in the southeastern United States. And there's some early corn that was planted in Florida and Georgia and back to the west towards Mississippi. And all of that crop is going to be impacted. Some of it will have to be replanted. It's not a large amount either, but it's still something that at least a few farmers are going to have to deal with.
Hey, thanks so much, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.